So I'm pleased to be here today, the arrow, right, to share the results of work by the UIC Center for Population Health and Health Disparities on Chicago's primary care safety net and breast cancer. I'm going to cover three topics this morning. First, I'm going to provide you some background on our center and how we came to study Chicago's primary care safety net. Second, I'm going to describe the safety net and its operations and capacity. And then finally, discuss more specifically the breast cancer services that they offer and their referral practices and how that links to really the policy implications going forward. Let's see. First, let's start with a picture of the disparity in breast cancer mortality between African-American women and white women over time. Since the early 1990s, the gap has remained fairly constant or slightly decreased nationally, whereas New York City has closed the gap significantly in recent years. But in Chicago, the gap has worsened, with African-American women dying at an increased rate in recent years, while whites experienced a further decline. This disparity has concerned researchers, providers, and advocates who have been addressing this problem on several fronts for the past 7 years. In order to orient the study that I'm going to discuss, let me provide you with some background on disparities research at UIC and our National Cancer Institute-funded center, which we received in 2005. The center designed a study based on the collection of detailed information on women with breast cancer in Chicago. Ultimately, what we call Breast Cancer Care in Chicago collected detailed information on 989 women diagnosed with breast cancer and also used medical records data on 850 of them. Researchers at the center were actively involved in the Metropolitan Chicago Breast Cancer Task Force at the same time, a group that developed a comprehensive policy and advocacy agenda to address the disparity and began implementing it at the same time UIC began conducting this research. We received a second round of funding in 2010 and supplemental funding to study the primary care safety net. Using the breast cancer care in Chicago data, researchers at UIC studied the problem of disparity by geography. Data from the Health Resources and Service Administration allowed them to categorize the census tracts of Chicago based on whether they were recognized medically underserved areas or eligible to be one. That is, that they met the criteria as defined in the Index of Medical Underservice. So in a few moments, I'm going to show you a map that will of where these areas are. There were two key findings from this analysis that led our group to focus more closely on the primary care safety net. First of all was the fact that women who resided in the two different types of MUA areas reported equal access to care and had similar rates of mammography. For example, they were equally likely to say they had a regular source of care and that they had, in fact, had a clinical breast exam in the past 2 years. However, the women in the MUA areas with federal designation were half as likely to have a late stage of diagnosis of breast cancer. So that led us to ask the question, why do we observe this difference between similar women? The role of the federally qualified health center was a possible factor because the primary distinction between an MUA and in what we call an MUA eligible area is the actual presence of an FQHC. Second, could there be something about the characteristics of the primary care that these two groups of women received so they were not getting timely access to screening? Finally, did we know how primary care providers provided and connected women to breast cancer screening and treatment when necessary? Here describes our methodology, which is a little complex, so I'm going to explain it. So I think it's important to understand, if you're not familiar with disparities research, such as ours, that they use methods of multi-level analysis. They rely on data at several different levels, the patient, contextual level, the environment, and even sometimes the policy level. And the findings above that I'm going to describe resulted from individual breast cancer patient data, the key findings that I just described. And they allowed us to control for age, access, and utilization. And then at the contextual level, we looked at MUA status, poverty, income, in education. And we often debate, is MUA a policy or a context? But it can be one of both of those levels of analysis. So by surveying Chicago's primary care safety net, we were trying to better understand the context of health care delivery in these areas. And we needed to get data at the delivery site level in each of these areas, not just the organizations that are present. So we had a 32-item questionnaire designed to understand the local operations, when the clinic was open, how many patients it was serving, how many physicians it had, and its breast cancer services. Did the clinic make mammography appointments for their patients, for example? Where did they refer their patients for screening? How knowledgeable were they about the Illinois Breast and Cervical Cancer Program? Another important feature of our survey that I want to highlight was that we collected the same data as the federal government collects on FQHCs through the Uniform Data System. And this had two important implications. First of all, we hoped it would reduce the data burden on our respondents for clinics that were already reporting on the UDS. And second, we had comparative data on the non-FQHC sites that are part of the safety net, which does not exist in typically. So let me just describe Chicago's primary safety net first. There's one thing that you can't miss. It is large. There are almost 150 sites operated by 28 different organizations, including Planned Parenthood's family planning clinics, two networks of public clinics with 16 sites, and many clinics serving the homeless in shelters and temporary housing. Most of the FQHCs operate multiple sites. In fact, one FQHC was operating 33 sites in the survey year. So now let me show you the map. And I have extra copies of this map and one with the distribution just to pass around so people can look more closely. Here you can see on the map where Chicago's MUA areas are. The tan areas have the federal designation, and the pink areas are those that we call eligible or undesignated. They are mostly contiguous set of census tracts on the south side. It is obvious that the pink areas have few providers because we do not see many dots there. In fact, there are only 8 primary care safety net clinics in the pink areas compared with 82 in the tan areas. And the different colored dots show you our family planning clinics, our network of public clinics, FQHCs, and free clinics in Chicago. Each organization that was asked to complete a survey for each one of its delivery sites. We received data from 37 sites that were part of multi-site organizations and 5 single-site clinics in the Chicago area. Our sample represented just over 1/3 of primary care safety net clinics. And we excluded the healthcare for the homeless program because their service delivery model differs. Now let's look at their organizational capacity. We explored the availability of services and potential organizational barriers to access. Respondents were generally open during the week and had evening hours, with Thursday being the most common evening hour reported. And just over 1/4 provided services on Saturdays, and not a single one of our respondents was open on Sundays. Now let's look at their staffing that they reported to us. While there are some larger primary care safety net clinics in our sample with several general practitioners, OBGYNs, and even some specialty providers, most clinics in Chicago reported to us that they operate with less than 5 providers. And with regard to the case managers who assist patients in accessing services and coordinating care, we found that most of the clinics were not likely to have a case manager. Some of the sites did report to us having other enabling staff, and one of the most common was a large number of health educators. Here we get a sense about the number of visits provided, which can be an important measure of the overall capacity to serve women in the community. You can see the variation in the range in size, with the largest clinic in our sample providing almost 75,000 visits per year. And the clinics that reported both FTEs and visits had a mean of just over 3,000 visits per provider and almost 2,200 for their mid-level providers, such as nurse practitioner. Now let's look a little bit at their patient populations. So although we were not evaluating whether these clinics met the definition of a primary care medical home, we were interested in whether they had an established relationship with their patients, and this is one of the questions on the UDF. And you also will recall that I said one of the findings from our analysis of breast cancer care in Chicago was that two-thirds of the women actually reported that they had had a regular source of care. That was very common. So we found here, again, we have further evidence of that, that the patients at the clinics were most likely to have been regular patients at these sites. They saw about 1,500 women a year of screening age. And we also asked them about the insurance status of their female patients over 20 years of age. There really is a significant difference in Chicago amongst the different providers in the proportion of different patients by insurance type. 70% of our public clinic patients are uninsured, as opposed to only 40% at FQHC and family planning clinics, which serve a larger number of Medicaid and privately insured patients. So we then asked a range of questions, actually in the survey they were the first questions, on breast cancer services. I'm going to start with breast cancer education, its availability and integration into routine care, and then move into more directly into the referrals. So the safety net clinics we surveyed make available and give patients information on breast cancer and education and screening. However, what we'll see, what you see in this data with the in the last three morning is that far fewer are monitoring or tracking these activities regularly. And so they really don't know whether or not they are actually helping women to get screening. And less than two-thirds of the sites remind physicians, and only a few track actually breast cancer education as a quality measure. And not surprisingly, I think in primary care safety net, it's not that common yet to have financial incentives associated with providing these services to your patients. Now about actual access to mammography. I think one of the things that we knew but wanted to see how it impacted really is that basically mammography is generally unavailable on-site at primary care safety net clinics. Only a quarter of clinics surveyed have, patient navigators then to assist their patients in accessing these off-site services. And our Department of Public Health actually is the largest provider of on-site mammography in the city. Now, where do they refer? How do they refer their patients? So amongst our sample, more clinics reported that they only provide the referral information to patients as opposed to making the actual appointment. Now, when we consider that these patients are unlikely to have assistance in following through with the recommendation to be screened, they may have some challenges actually accessing screening. So we asked clinics to tell us really where they were referring their patients in Chicago and what was the nature of their relationships with the hospitals and other sites they were referring their patients to. So in Chicago, which has a large safety net and large number of hospitals, clinics are referring patients to a large number of hospitals and to the clinics that provide on-site mammography. And it's interesting because most of the clinics consider their relationships with these providers to be formal, so that they have an exchange, they have some sort of an exchange. And moreover, they estimate that in most, and even in some cases, in most cases, almost all, and in some cases, almost all, of their patients are being referred to one hospital site. Okay? But when we ask them, they were estimating the percentages of referrals for us. They all, many of them listed two or three different organizations, one having a large number and then a few, two, a second or a third secondary one. Among our respondents was Planned Parenthood, and it's very interesting because Planned Parenthood has a different practice. They have negotiated discounted rates with 15 different providers, and all patients are given this general information on where they can seek mammography. So we thought a little bit about how could we understand these referral patterns from the perspective of the hospital, and how could we actually measure the burden. And this is a slightly larger group of patients based than just the individual clinic data we had. We had some other organizational data. So if a clinic told me that they referred 75% of their women, for example, to Providence Hospital. We then took their female population of screening age and estimated the number of patients that they were referring to that institution, and then aggregated that across the city to try to explore the referral burden on different hospitals in Chicago. What is immediately apparent is while clinics refer to a large number of hospitals, because we have a large uninsured population, there are also a few hospitals that are providing most of the, that are screening the majority of the patients in the top here. There is also one other large provider of another hospital provider of screening to the safety net clinic, which doesn't appear in the sample, which is Mount Sinai Hospital, due to our sample in particular. Also, it is important, I'm going to talk a little bit now about the Illinois Breast and Cervical Cancer Program for the uninsured, but that also may be influencing our results here since we have a lot of public clinics in our sample. So IBCCP, for those of you who are not familiar, is the national program for the uninsured. Illinois is unusual in that its program actually provides coverage for any woman, regardless of income. And in Chicago, not only our Chicago Department of Public Health, but many of the FQHCs that we surveyed are actually lead agencies assisting in the case management of these women. And we weren't surprised to learn that 38% of the sites that we surveyed had dedicated staff to manage IBCCP enrollment. So that actually means that uninsured women in Chicago are getting a lot of assistance in accessing screening. But there's a challenge, and the challenge is that actually IBCCP lacks adequate funding to serve all women who are referred to the program for routine screening. So while we're referring them into the program, they may or may not be able to have routine screening. In fact, in the most recent fiscal year, which started in July, we are currently only referring for diagnostic mammography, uninsured women for diagnostic mammography in Illinois. So they have run out of money. So I think another question, we've showed you a little bit about the referrals and the hospital system, and I think the question is the information getting back to the clinic? So what are the outcomes of these referral practices, okay? So I want to show you some graphs, really, and this is by type of clinic, but I think it's you can think of it other ways. We ask clinics how often the clinic receives the abnormal findings of their patients, okay? So is the information getting back? And I think this provides some insight into the primary care safety net clinics, their perception of how effective their referral practices are and the information they have. On the left, what you'll see is that 18 of our clinics said that they always receive the results on their patients of theirs that are abnormal, have abnormal findings. And also an additional 15 said that they receive it most of the time. And these were the most common responses. And private providers were more likely to say that they receive it always than the public providers or family planning clinics, which did not say they receive it always. And another two clinics said to us, oh, we receive it about half of the time. And only one public clinic said, we get it sometimes. And I think that this is very telling because really what we take from this is that from the perspective of the clinics, they feel that they have the information to follow up on the patients that need care. And we learned earlier that they really don't broadly have the resources to track their patients, or they're telling us that, and they're not using quality measures, but they really, so this is to some degree a little bit inconsistent with our earlier findings from breast cancer care in Chicago, where we see a late stage diagnosis and we see women not really, clinics not having the information. So what do we conclude then from this? Our study really found that Chicago's diverse primary care safety net is providing breast cancer education and referrals for screening. And they're actually very well organized to provide services through IBCCP for the uninsured. But they don't really have the systems and capacity to track their patients' care and to evaluate their success in getting women screened. In fact, only 29% of our respondents are using only electronic health records, and 31% did not have one at all. There are important policy implications from our perspective from these results. Under the Affordable Care Act, the FQHCs are the essential providers of primary care to the currently uninsured who face a lot of challenges. And yet we see that they really don't have the capacity to track and monitor the quality of their patients across settings. And this is actually, with regard to breast cancer disparities, we now have led us to sort of say, well, they are referring their patients and they are providing patient education. We need to look further down. So the Illinois Quality of Care Consortium, which is part of the Metropolitan Chicago Breast Cancer Task Force, is looking at what is happening to women when they get to the mammography sites more directly. But this has also led us to think a little bit more about how we can use the UDS and data on federally qualified health centers more broadly to understand the safety net. And we actually found that 15, on that map I showed you, the original map with the pink and the tan, we found that 15 of the 42 sites we surveyed were serving patients from those pink areas. So we actually know that patients in the undesignated MUAs do have access to care. And that sort of answered one of our questions. But we still have a lot of questions with regards to the quality and the nature of the referral capacity of our primary care safety net. Thank you very much.
You have time if you want to take questions.
Go to your old stomping ground. I bet you have a question.
Sort of breathtaking on so many levels. I mean, obviously, one is the complexity of this, right? You just think that there would be some sort of clear one-to-one instead of many-to-many organized relationship and responsibility. Is there any hope of it moving in that direction, or does it just seem more fragmented? Yeah. And I guess the next question really relates to, you turn the tape recorder on in the midst of, I think, a very severe crisis period in terms of funding for these.
Yeah.
I heard you say that some of them are cutting out screening mammography entirely, can only do diagnostic mammography. Status, I think, is a very fiscally bad way. So what's your perspective on how this can get better, how to get out of the kind of the mess that you described?
So I think that it is true. So we have this sort of inherent contradiction in this from the clinic's perspective, which is that we have a very fragmented delivery system, and they potentially have patients going to multiple, different institutions. But from their perspective, we're really referring to one hospital, or the bulk are going to one hospital. So I think it's kind of human instinct to sort of, and that abnormal findings to sort of say, we kind of have a handle on it, they feel like they have a handle somewhat. But it is definitely a challenge to figure out how these different networks of primary and how these smaller FQHCs are going to link effectively with hospitals to make this less fragmented for their patients. In terms of the funding, I think in terms of the funding, I think that the challenge, and we saw it there, is that the burden is really on the public system with regards to some of the funding challenges more openly. I think that we want to further explore the experience of patients that are patients at federally qualified health centers that are lead agencies for the IBCCP program. We're wondering who's getting into the program. And I think that, the question is, can we be more targeted in our screening efforts and really being sure that women that are at high risk? And in our second round of funding, we're currently studying using risk assessment in a network of FQHCs with underserved women to see if that's a more effective strategy to actually get screen women in a more timely fashion.
Thank you very much.